Okay, the next talk is up, and it's Thierry Carrez and Luis Vineras on Nubo, the French government's sovereign cloud. Welcome, and the stage is yours.
Thanks, Felix. Thanks, everyone, for joining today. I know it's second day of FOSDEM. It's always more difficult. So we will talk about digital sovereignty, and not just about the importance of doing it, but more a practical example of people doing it today using open source solutions. Luis is going to co-present with me. He's a master's student in European affairs at Sciences Po Paris, also an apprentice at the Public Finance General Directorate at the French Finance Ministry, and the Liber IT Association co-founder and president. Liber IT is a group that's trying to increase adoption of open source in student activities, I think. And my name is Thierry Carrez. I'm the general manager for the Open Infra Foundation, which is the steward behind the OpenStack project. I'm also the vice chair at the Open Source Initiative, the body that defends the open source definition. And I've been a release manager for OpenStack for the last 15 years. So that's why I'm helping giving some extra context to this project, because Nubo is based on an OpenStack cloud. And so we wanted to give you a quick history of why OpenStack plays a role in digital sovereignty. So OpenStack is an openly developed open source solution for cloud software. Basically, if you want to provide infrastructure, if you want to do what Amazon Web Service or Google Compute Cloud does, there is open source software that's available out there to help you do it. It's developed by a global community. Actually, more than 50% of our recent activity over the past 2 years is coming out of Europe and Middle East and Africa, and for only 20% in North America and 30% in the Asia Pacific region. And you might have heard that Kubernetes killed OpenStack or made it irrelevant. The reality is that it actually reinforced OpenStack, because Kubernetes provides a really nice way to abstract the infrastructure and deploy containerized applications. And so if you want to do that on top of Amazon Web Services, you can do that with Kubernetes as well. And if you want to do that on top of OpenStack-driven resources, you can do that as well. So that actually put OpenStack more on the map than it destroyed it. In terms of OpenStack today, we're actually celebrating the 15th birthday this year. It's really the age of maturity, so it's a bit like the Linux kernel. Mostly new development is driven by new advancement in hardware capabilities or new type of workloads that need to be enabled through technologies accessible to all. Over the past year, we've seen three key trends that drive a lot of new adoption for open infrastructure. The first one is clearly AI, like everyone has been hearing about it by now. It requires a lot of new capacity, new accelerated capacity, and so people that are deploying that capacity today are using software that's already available to do that. There's also a lot of people that are escaping the VMware new aggressive licensing. Since Broadcom bought VMware, people have been receiving invoices that could be tenfold what they used to pay. And so clearly, those people are scrambling up to find solutions. And for the most adventurous that also want to drive a cloud transformation, more of a programmable approach to infrastructure, OpenStack is there as an option. And the third driver, which is why we're here today, is digital sovereignty. Why digital sovereignty? Well, there is a clear need today more than ever for local infrastructure. It's clear that we need programmable compute infrastructure to sustain our software-driven economy, and that means we need access to resources that you can access programmatically with cloud APIs. And at the same time, this is only offered or mostly offered by US or China-based providers. So how do we get that access without being vulnerable to weaponizing access? Like tomorrow, the new US president could just say, well, like it's illegal for Amazon Web Service to continue delivering services in Europe. What then? Like, how much of our economy is going to crumble? We need to build that local capacity today, because even if it doesn't do it, it will use it in threats to drive some, or as a way to negotiate something else. And we'll have to give in on something else because so that it doesn't push the button. We also need even without taking like this step, which used to be crazy, now not that crazy, you also need resiliency against state actor espionage. There is a law in the US that allows the government to actually force any US-based company to disclose information that's about a foreign industry. So there is hints that has been used for state actor espionage by the US, by China, for anything that's localized there. So even for our industry, it's very important that we have this local capacity. And finally, even without the current geopolitical trouble, we have very progressive privacy laws in the EU. It's very important that our data is protected by our laws. And that needs, our data needs to be stored in under jurisdictions that where that law applies. Otherwise, we just lose this this benefit of living in the EU. So why open source? Why open source helps with this goal of building local infrastructure? Well, it has several properties that are very interesting. Availability, it's the fact that using open source software, you actually have permissionless access to that technology. You don't need to ask anyone for permission. You don't need to have the permission of the US government before using open source. So you can just take it. There is independence, the fact that it's provided by a collection of participants. OpenStack is openly developed by a wide community of organizations. That gives you, you don't have a dependency on a specific actor. You don't buy it from one company which could be influenced into doing something else. So you have this independence, you have this transparency, the governance is very open, every discussion is happening.
So it was in the 2008 economic crisis, the government proposed a stimulus package called Investment Plan for the Future. And within that plan, you had many different objectives. A couple of them were to modernize and industrialize the state-run hosting infrastructures of the state, and industrialize also computing environments for the state IT teams. All of that obviously needed to meet the needs of security and resilience, be interministerial by default, and enhance state sovereignty. With these objectives in mind, a team, which was then overtaken by Renaud Chaillat, who is now the current director and founder of the Nubo project, they proposed a two-part project. So the first part is a set of tooling to create and manage an open source cloud, meaning it manage industrial scale cloud infrastructure, so provisions to VM, billings, as well as upgrades without downtime. And they insisted that those toolings needed to be based on free software and specifically community versions of the free software. And we'll come back to that a bit later. The second part of the project was an interministerial hosting offer, obviously based on the open source cloud tools, so that other public administration can consume pay-as-you-go resources and benefit from the industrial scale security and customer support that we have at Nubo. That's a quick rundown of the milestones. I won't get into the details. I just want you to remember two key dates. The first production, the production startup of the first platform in July 2018, and then the customer portal and center of excellence in November 2019. Also notable is the four major OpenStack upgrades, thanks to Cola and Ansible throughout the span of several years. The offer as it stands today, we have two independent and autonomous sites. Within each site, we have two platforms. So, one is exposed to the internet. The other is exposed to the internal network of the state, RIE. And within the two platforms, you have two availability zones. We deploy all those OpenStack components. We also do observability through open source components. And last but not least, we have the customer portal for onboarding and support, which is quite important. When it comes to the numbers, we have about 450 projects, about 2,000 tenants, and a lot more VMs and vCPUs. All of that is serving daily 15 different public administrations. And it keeps growing, so much so that now we have a new offer named Kubo, which is a namespace as a service offer. So it's based on Kubernetes and Cluster API. And as Thierry said, Kubo can be inside OpenStack, and that's what we're doing. It's a Kubo, the offer is a whole tenant inside OpenStack and using the Nubo APIs. Now let's talk about the Thierry talked about the free software and the sovereignty behind it. Let's see how free software can really be the chosen path for sovereignty. Before that, I just want you to make a distinction between product and project. I made this distinction thanks to Bastien Guéry. So maybe you know him. I urge you to read this blog post about it. It's in French, but it's great. So basically, we have two things. We have the product. The product is just the source code and the license. And the license dictates how you can use the source code. In some cases, the documentation is also part of the product. For example, the Apache license, the documentation is part of it. And the project is everything else. So it's maintenance, it's support, it's build pipelines, it's PRs, merge issues, and so on. It's everything else. And that's very important to make the distinction, I believe, because then we can make a difference between formal freedoms and real freedoms. And using free software for the state cloud, the sovereignty, using it as a product, so meaning we only care about the code and the license behind it, it enables us to have the four essential freedoms, which enables us transparency over the code that we use, taken over the project. So one answer would be, well, maintain your own fork, but we use way too many products, and so that's not feasible, and it's not desirable. We want to pool resources with free software, not separate them. And that's where the community versions of free software really shines for digital sovereignty, because they allow us the possibility to take part of the contribution, the collaboration, and the governance process. And that's how we can better control how the project is handled when we participate in it. If we do that, though, then we need to internalize competencies, obviously. But that's at the French Finance Ministry, we're quite lucky because they have been doing so for a quite long time, and it's one of the largest information system of Europe. So that's a great thing. And obviously, DigiFeed prefers to internalize competencies rather than licenses. So from the 2000s, early 2000s, as you can see, they have developed skills mainly, if not exclusively, based on free software about virtualization and so on. And as you can see also, they chose PostgreSQL over Oracle for the databases. We haven't even given a definition yet of sovereignty. It is one of the most controversial ideas in political science and international law, but I'll try to give it a shot in the context of a state cloud. So if sovereignty refers to the ultimate authority in the decision-making process of the state and in the maintenance of order, then in the context of the state cloud, I define it as a computing environment that is owned, controlled, and operated by the state. That way, as Thierry said, we can ensure that the data and services are satisfactory and regulated by our own laws, and only our laws. And that's different and contrary to just mere independence. Obviously, you can control the infrastructure of AWS Cloud, but you do not own it and you do not operate it. And I'm not even mentioning the US Cloud Act that Thierry was talking about. Even OVH Cloud, you don't own it, you don't operate it. The company can go out of business, you don't have it. That's why we need local free software to have full sovereignty. So where are we going from here? That's the conclusion. First of all, we want to thank the Nubo project, wants to thank the Grid community for the past 20 years. Free software has given a lot of benefits and independence, and that's great. We have contributed notably to OpenVSwitch, OpenStack, ManageIQ, and so on. Lately, though, it's a bit more difficult due to the migration of the CentOS to Debian, so we're lagging a bit behind the OpenStack latest updates. So contributing relevant patches is a bit more complex. Looking ahead, though, we have the Kubo offer that I was talking about. That's a cluster API and Kubernetes distribution that we want to open source. So that's coming up. And we are committed to increasing our contribution, both internally with the Denum. I don't know if anyone here from the Denum is here. That's what we're going to do, and also externally by sharing our expertise and contributing back to the projects. And that's about it. So thank you for your attention. Questions? No? Nope. Questions? All right. Well, we have time for questions, so.
Great timing.
Yeah, thanks.
Higher security qualification like this for us, and
Like what, sorry?
There is qualification, which is called diffusion
assistance. Ah, yeah, okay.
Which is required for a higher level of security. Do you aim to provide it in a way? And the second question, do you work with Cloud P, which is for the interior ministry?
Okay. Okay. So, Josephine is here. She's my boss. Can you repeat the question? Okay. So the question is: do we plan on having diffusion restreinte, which is a high, it's a qualification for security, and also do we work with Cloud P, right? So, as I was saying, she's my boss. I'm an apprentice. I've been here for just a few months. So maybe. I don't want to say anything bad. that's right, just disclaimer. We don't have the diffusion restreinte yet. Not yet, but we're planning on having it. We have a set of qualifications for security, which is mainly based on the Secnum Cloud qualification. It's not Secnum Cloud, we're also planning on having that. And we want to work with the, we work with the Cloud P, with Cloud P. Yeah, that's it.
Which is also an OpenStack cloud.
Which is also an OpenStack cloud. Any other question? Oh, wait, too many. He was first.
Well, with Nuva, you had quite a lot of tenants and departments which have been on board. How did you get them on board? Were they booked or did you attract them?
For the public administration, do you mean?
Yeah.
I think it's also... Ah, yeah, repeat the question. How did we get so many tenants and projects in the Cloud Nubo? I think one of the key things is the... Have you heard about the Cloud Doctrine? Maybe not. The Cloud Doctrine is the state doctrine that now says, well, IT teams should use cloud infrastructures and not have their own local production things and everything. And because we're also very interministerial and open, it's quite easy to get people to come in. Yep.
What's the range of kind of different criticality of projects that you have on your infrastructure? And have you had any situations where someone said, yeah, that's really interesting, but our project is too special to go onto this infrastructure?
Can you repeat the question?
No,
me but
simpler version of the question. Have you come across situations where people have said our project is too special for some security reason or criticality reason?
Oh, yeah.
And how have you dealt with that? And have you been able to encourage it?
All right. Yeah, that happened. So the question is, projects that come into Nubo and say, is the our project is too special or requires too many security qualifications and so on. It happened. Basically, what we did is they still tried the Nubo APIs for the project because they're developing it, and also because we're working in parallel to get the security qualifications. So by the time that their project is ready, we may have the qualification. How to tell the finance ministry to use an OpenStack cloud, basically. Yeah?
Another finance ministry.
Another finance ministry. I don't have enough hindsight on the Nubo project right now, so I won't be able to tell it. Maybe you can say something about it.
There are like OpenStack clouds being used in other some other European countries. The problem is, like, I discovered the Nubo project by accident by a LinkedIn post saying, "Oh, we did that with OpenStack." So some, and I live in France and I pay my taxes. so I like, it's sometimes super difficult to uncover government activity. There's a bit of an echo chamber within the government, might be well known, but outside there is no. It's not as actively public or engaging as publicly as, and it was great to see you all really starting talking about it, because that really allowed us to have that conversation and this presentation. And I feel like we know of other governments that are deploying OpenStack clouds, but sometimes they don't tell us. So it's really, I know Estonia, I know some in Italy, but it's super difficult to track where they are at, and because they don't communicate at all. And so it's super difficult.
Maybe I can just add a few things. OSPOs, public OSPOs, Open Source Program Office, that's also a way to go. I don't know the other. Yeah, the other. Exactly. And also the presentations just before us. I don't know if they're still here. That's about it. Like, trying to get the public administration to be public about what they're doing, that's a huge work. And France is part of a precursor on that, actually.
Yep. I come to force them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Come here.
Yeah. Come to force them as well. Sorry, can you speak louder, please? Yep. For the distribution of the open source, we don't have yet a timeline. Yep, it's working on it. Ah, repeat the question. is the Kubo distribution, do we have a timeline for the Kubo distribution? And now it times it up. So thank you very much for your questions. Yeah.